you know, and then another girl, a really sweet girl, she's a nurse. She was like, kind of like, I understand your philosophy, your message and everything, but, you know, what do you, you know, kind of like, not offensive to her, but I'm kind of realizing that, you know, if I have to shorten it up, maybe I'd take some of that bashing the medical system, you know, out of there.
Okay, so I would suggest if you're bashing the medical system and alienating a significant percentage of your audience, I would be very, very careful with that. If you're, and I would, in other words, I would try and figure out a way to bash medicine without alienating medical professionals. And a lot of times they are completely in agreement with the message that we give. They just don't want to be made wrong as human beings. Right?
I say, listen, it's not the doctors, it's not the nurses. They're amazing.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, okay, I have nothing against medical bashing. But a higher order of message giving is our making our message attractive to them rather than making our message attractive. Like making it a no-brainer for them to say, yes, I want chiropractic care starting. I hope you accept me into care.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say the highest order of priority is to figure out how to arrive to your public with that message.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Awesome. Thanks.
But I'm also going to open it up to questions from everyone. We can run through a bunch of questions and then as a group, pick the priorities of what we want to work on. So I'm not just going to go with whoever asked the question first, but is there any kind of priority of stuff that you guys want to talk about? Hello. And for those of you who got on late, we got technical problems and we'll have our speaker next week. Hello.
And we, how you train the group on chiropractic? Apart Career Europe and taking the team to Career Europe, how you infuse chiropractic and what rhythm to you? To your CA, your teams, and
okay, so that's a really, really good question. Okay, so how do you train your team to chiropractic apart from taking them to Chiro Europe, taking them to Grand Dion Conscience? Okay, so so more questions. Hello, come on, people. Okay. Let's put it this way.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
How do you motivate your team? Like, I lay out the bonuses and how they can get bonuses, getting people to the workshops, you know, getting people checks, signing people up after workshops and all that stuff. But, like, how do you, I mean, they might just not be motivated by bonuses, but how do you motivate them to kind of, I guess, go into more of, like, the sales and promotion side, you know, without making them think?
Okay. All right. I got that. What else? Nothing else?
And how you choose a second chiropractor to work with you?
You don't.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, actually, it's a good question.
How do you lead your team without being like an asshole?
Yeah. How to not be an asshole. Okay, what else? Okay, so, all right. So Joe Lupo, your intended speaker for today, when I first saw him speak, I identified very clearly with him because he had a similar profile to what I had going into chiropractic. He was an adult. Then when he went in, he wasn't just a kid going straight out of school. So he was an adult. he'd had a career in construction, which I had as well. He had a family to feed. So it was like, it was a real shift of income generation. And it was a looking to provide a better life for our families. Now, big difference between him and me is that he was exposed to the big idea of chiropractic and vitalism before he even went to school. And that's part of what inspired him to become a chiropractor. And that came to me 3 years after I graduated. So he went in already with a very, very big idea of chiropractic. But he also went in with great clarity that chiropractic is a really, really, really good life. Like, it is so easy to make a living as a chiropractor compared to getting up early, going to a muddy job site, working with people, you know, all that stuff that happens in construction. And chiropractic is so clean and easy by comparison. Okay. So one of the things that inspired me about Joe and his very close, if not best friend, Hank Cousineau, whom he went to school with, who also came from a working background before going to school, is that they were incredibly hardworking and incredibly driven to do what they were doing, right? And so when Sid would get up and do the "Work is fun, I love to work" chant, like, it was, "Work is fun, I love to work. Work is fun, I love to work." And it was like, it's an affirmation that what we're doing is fun and profitable and joyous and worth the energy that goes into it. Now, most chiropractors that I see right now, and this is not a criticism, this is an observation, are looking to figure out how to develop passive income and not have to work. And that means getting associates, and it means or figuring out some other business or whatever. And the point is that you can make a better living being a chiropractor than pretty much anything else you can possibly imagine. And you're doing good for humanity while you're doing it, meaning you can make a great living, right? No one is chasing volume at this point that is like dangerous to your physical and mental well-being. Okay. Like, nobody's being pushed to that. What I'm saying is that you've got the potential to have a really great, extremely high-paying job that can provide a great living for you and your family. And yes, absolutely look for passive income vehicles to invest the money that you make in your office. Don't be foolish and spend all your money, but you make your living being a chiropractor. And chiropractors don't want to adjust people. It's like they don't want to be in their offices. It's like, fuck, for fuck's sake, we're in our offices for 15, 20, 23 hours a week, and we're looking to get that down, right? And so Ellie, who was on the call earlier this week, talked about he was working, I don't know, six shifts or something and working 15 hours a week or whatever, and he opened up two other shifts, and his practice has more than grown by the time of the shifts that he's added. Meaning, as we go into this mode of not wanting to work, we're restricting and constricting the energy about our practice. And so this is a long-winded intro to your question about how do you train your chiropractic team. Look, the world doesn't support chiropractic. the world is working under a, they might accept it once it's presented to them in a way that that reaches them, so they understand it, but they're not looking for a physical discipline that will reconnect person the physical with person the spiritual. They're not looking for, you know, healing or whatever. They're looking at us as an alternative or an extension of the medical paradigm. So crack my back and make my headache go away, or crack my back and resolve my sciatica for me, or crack my back and have my disease go on holiday. That's what they're looking at us for. And they're not looking at us for the service that we aspire to provide, which is that reconnection of the physical and the spiritual. And our team, our CAs, our associates, come into our circle of influence, and they have no idea of any of this. And so the question is, how do you train and how do you motivate and how do you inspire your team? You are going to have to devote hours and hours and hours and hours and days and months and weekend and extra hours to leading your team. And if you expect there to be some external source of inspiration, it's not there. It's not there. They're looking to you as their leader. And they're looking to you as their teacher, and they're looking to you for everything. And if you're not capable of doing that or providing that for them, then you shouldn't have a team. Go to automated check-in, check-out, computer stuff, whatever. But if you can't lead a group of people to a goal, then don't have a team. You know, do something else. Work solo. You can't farm it out. Well, actually, I say that. We're about to start a kick-ass CA program. But it's an added benefit to and needs to sync with the leadership that the docs are providing in their offices. And that's just the way it is. You know, there's just no getting around it. You're the general, you're the lieutenant, you're the sergeant, you're the person in the trenches there next to them. And they have to see that you're in there. And as soon as you become, you know, the business owner and you just want to put in systems and you're going to teach and inspire, you know, blah, 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 it's not going to work. Right? How long do you have to do that for? You have to do it until they function perfectly for you. And there's no way around that. And the closest that I can come in an analogy of how chiropractic offices work is that we are like small restaurants. Right? Not small restaurants. We're like restaurants. Excuse me. We're not like restaurant chains. We're like restaurants. And so we're cooking up a good meal that the public says, I want to eat some of that food, and I'll go back on a regular enough basis that I'm willing to go see these people on a regular basis. And most chiropractors that I know now, they either want to become restaurant consultants, like straight out of the bat, or they want to open up a franchise of, you know, McDonald's franchise, and they haven't gotten their own business in order yet. All right. The theme that I have going into this Cairo Europe is 2023, order from chaos. We've just had 3 years of shit. We've had craziness, we've had upset, we've had blah, 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 right? And now it's time for us to create order again. And we have to, you know, the whole concept of well, I'll just get the systems automated so that I don't have to put any energy into it, that's not real. If you stop cleaning your house for a week, what happens? If you stop physically cleaning your house, I'm talking about your bathroom, your kitchen, the toilet, your bed, your whatever, right? If you stop doing that for a week, what's going to happen? And if you stop doing that for a month, what's going to happen? And if you stop doing it for 5 years, what's going to happen? So you know all those hoarding TV shows that are so dramatic? That's how most chiropractic offices are energetically. Okay? Everybody's like doing this between the stacks of magazines and the cat shit, right? And if we can't figure out a way to make everything perfectly ordered in alignment with our goal number, if we can't do that, then we revert back to chaos. We revert back to, the second law of thermodynamics, entropy, everything tends towards chaos. Well, the same thing with our businesses. And the whole concept that I'm just going to get this so perfectly systemized that it's going to be automatic and I won't have to think about it. And, you know, people are going to come in and blah, 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 blah. It's not real. Tell me somebody that does that. Give me an example of somebody that does that. And then give me an example of somebody that does that, that's actually teaching other people to do that. And I don't know of any examples in our profession. You know, and you can use examples of, oh, but so-and-so did this and this. Generally, there's going to be some kind of either in with insurance, right? Like insurance is paying for the care. There's this massive backlog of new people coming in because no one's having to actually pay for it. So yeah, you can build a pretty automated system and not have to clean shit up if that's the premise of your business. But for anybody who's got a restaurant that's not subsidized by an insurance company, you need to make them, they have to want the food and they have to want to come back and eat your food. And then your food needs to be delivered in a profitable way for you, a profitable and energetically respectful way. So I'm going to give you guys several things that I've been thinking about recently. I had a couple of consultation calls with people. And again, I don't mean to offend anyone with this. So when I start something like that, it probably means that I'm going to, right? I do not mean to offend anyone with this. Our number is dependent upon, and I really suggest you guys watch the video of the seven things. So I posted it as the formula, but forget the formula. The seven things that determine your number are, four of them are procedural systems, et cetera. And then three of them are conceptual energy presentation. Okay. So we've got the quality of your procedures. We've got your competence quadrant, working those procedures. We've got your physical capacity. And this one sort of goes between the two, right? Your confrontational tolerance. And the problems with the word confrontational tolerance is that people think that you need to get in people's faces and be wanting to pick a fight with them. And it's not that at all. When I say confrontational tolerance, what I mean is being willing to speak your truth and not moving away from that truth no matter what. So in other words, it's not, so this goes back, Emil, this goes back to what you were saying with the medical bashing. It's not a matter of making them wrong. It's just a matter of this is the way that I think. And then we got to figure out a way for the majority of the people in our community to go, well, I want me some of that too, to make it attractive, for it to be, you know, there's this, yeah, attractiveness to it. So quality of procedures, competence quadrant, capacity. Confrontational tolerance. Watch out with the word confrontation because it confuses people. Being willing to speak your truth. Okay. So then we go into the other three, which is the size of your message, the certainty in your delivery and the enthusiasm that you have doing it, right? And so chiropractors, you know, and I was just speaking with Sam Floriani and Adam Sheriff the other day, because they want me to go to Australia and do coaching there in August, September. And the average chiropractor in Australia is either seeing 57 visits a week or 60. I think it's 57 visits a week, either 57 or 67. I'm not sure which one it is. Right. And if you're seeing, let's say 60, if you're seeing 60 visits a week and you're working 30 hours and you're dealing with symptoms and you're taking all that stuff on board, you're exhausted. You're shattered at the end of the day. And I've been there and I've done that, right? And I know what it's like. It's like you're taking all this shit in and you're, you know, like you're so tired at the end of the week that you literally sit in a chair and it's like exhausting to physically lift your arms up. Has anybody else experienced that or not? Okay. You know, where you're just shattered by it. I promise you, it is 100 times easier to see 300 visits a week than it is those 60 visits a week. I promise you, but you will never get to 300 by doing 60 better or more efficient. It's a completely different game. It's a completely different energetic presentation. It's a completely, you have to actually show up as a different person. And if you don't change into that different person, you cannot make that shift. So you have to go with the size of message, the certainty, the enthusiasm. That's what's behind it. And then you have to build these systems and you have to train your systems with your team and you have to do all that work with your team where you are training in this model that is energetically congruent, reflective, and supportive of your goal number. Like you have to work like your goal number. You have to train to your goal number. You have to push to your goal number. And your goal number needs to be something real for you. You know, there's people on this call right now who have doubled their practice in 6 months. Okay. Who have been in practice for 5+ years. And I've got videos from them talking about it. And I'm going to post that in probably next week in the Kyra page, but it's like they have done that through their shifting energetically, not so much their procedures. And I'll say this over and over and over and over and over again. But until we make those shifts, it's not going to happen. Okay. So hang on, I'm getting bogged down. Okay. So I'm going back to numbers, right? I would say 0 to 150 visits a week is a starter practice. All right. It's either starter practice or retirement practice. You're so beaten up physically that you can't do it anymore, or you're working so few hours that that's it. And your life is set up and you just want to keep adjusting people. You love adjusting people, et cetera. That's 0 to 150 visits a week. All right. And I'd say 150 to 300 visits a week is a journeyman practice. It's like where we should be with our eyes closed easy. All right. And then 300 to 450 is where you're starting into moving into some kind of serious energetic expression. And then 450 plus would be a high volume practice. And I am not talking about doing this in 100 hours a week. You know, I'm talking about doing this in 25 hours a week. I told you guys this story over and over again when I went to see Rob Schiffman work, and he was seeing 2,400 visits a week. And because at the time I was seeing 400 visits a week in 24 adjusting hours, so 4 6-hour shifts, I thought this guy must be working 5 million hours a week. And he was actually seeing 2,400 visits a week in 21 hours a week, because he was doing something completely different to what I was doing. And if you're stuck on a certain level, if you're stuck at a certain number, you need to embrace, and you want to shift, you need to embrace the work that it's going to take to get to your goal. You need to embrace the process. Bonuses. Okay, so that question just came up now, and it's come up in the other group as well. I would be very, 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 very careful and very reluctant to place my motivation of my team on their financial bonuses. And I would not expect my team to grow my practice. Your team are there to create the environment, work with the systems, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, so that they're not slowing you down or chasing people away from the practice. There isn't a CA in the world that's going to get you 100 new patients a month. All right. And if there is a CA in the world who's going to get you 100 new patients a month, they're going to leave and they're going to be like the most high-powered real estate salesperson you can possibly imagine. Right? They're not going to stay in your office. Like, it's stupid. It's silly. It's stupid to expect it. So if you're talking about bonusing people, what you want to do is you want to have a bonus that you are delighted to pay them that doesn't change. So in other words, the example is you have the bonus is there, a little bit of food, the reward for the dog, and the dog has to jump up and get it out of your hand, right? And so this month it's here, and next month it's here, and next month it's here, and next month it's here, and then they can't get it anymore. And the moment they can't get it, they completely lose motivation. They're like, I just got screwed over. He's just, or she's just pushing this level of reward to me higher and higher and higher. I can't make it. Fuck it. I'm not doing it. So if you're going to bonus, I wouldn't do it based on how many people come to your class or what the recalls are or whatever. I would do it based on the money that your practice is generating. And you figure out a sustainable percentage over time. You also figure out where you're going to go, because I fucked up with this when we were at about 70 a day, and the goal was to get to 100 a day. So I worked out a bonus plan, and then I didn't realize that instead of getting to 100 a day, we ended up getting to 300 a day, and they were wanting that bonus from 70 to 300, at which point it was a ridiculous amount of money, and it was really, really not fun paying them, and I was resentful of that. And so when you change the rules on people after the fact, they're like, I just got screwed. And so you take this very, very good, motivated person that's working for you, and instead of them going, gosh, I love working for my boss, you know, I'm making a great living doing this, they go, I just got fucked. All right. So it needs to not change, but it needs to be sustainable over time for you. And so for average teams, I would look at, you know, 0.5% to 1% of growth over a certain number, right? And if you don't get that growth, then you don't bonus them, right? You're paying them for growth. You're paying for real growth. You can make it based on news, right? And if you got a capacity problem and you've got 20 news and a PVA of 50, I'm making shit up now, right? Which is 1,000, right? And it's very easy to shift that to 50 news with a PVA of 20. And you got the same exact number of people coming in per week, but all you've done is increased your workload by having more news come in. Does that make sense or not? And so what you want is you want it to make, you know, if we're now collecting 20 grand, you know, I'm going to give you 1% of everything over 20 grand. We make another grand, you get 10 bucks. We make 10 grand, you get 100 bucks. Okay, so choose the second DC to work, Sebastian. Okay. As soon as you decide to start coaching people, as soon as you decide to move outside of your primary energy input being your practice will stop growing and probably go down. Again, very, very, very few people actually running successful associate practices. So I would work, and so, okay, and I'll give you another example. I was working with this guy in the Netherlands about 15 years ago, and he had four offices. He had three, including himself, three docs. So the three docs were working in the four offices, and, you know, like travel and commutes and time and all the rest of it, right? And I don't remember, I remember the figure perfectly. I don't remember what the clinic numbers were or what the office fees were or what their PVAs were by comparison of one to the other. But I worked it. So he's going crazy, building these four practices, generating news for the associates who are chasing people away as quickly as they come in, you know, incredibly low PVA. So it's this huge amount of work to get them working. And he was making about, in his pocket, $3,000 a month off these two associates, right? And I worked out that if he saw like five more visits a day or seven more visits a day or whatever, he would make the same amount of money. And it's a hell of a lot easier to see seven more visits a day than it is to generate news for two other associates and run three other practices other than your own. Like ridiculously more simple. But the other thing is we also get addicted to that chaos and that craziness. So going back to when to hire an associate and how do you choose that person, I would suggest that you, well, Sharaf, who will be speaking again in April, who's up to 1,000 visits a week now, and he closes 3 weeks, four times a year. Right? First of all, where's he going to get a locum to see his thousands a week that's not going to fuck up his practice? That's one. And two, he's making more money than God, right? You know, like, why mess it up? Most chiropractors say they want to hire associates because they want to train. I just want to spread the chiropractic love and I want to help people and I want to, you know, teach young chiropractors how to do it, blah, 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 right? Mostly people want chiropractors there working for them because they don't want to work. Okay? Love working, love your work, get really good at it and push your capacity up. Push your capacity up. Push and push and push and push and push in an energetically respectful, sustainable way. And then when you're literally turning people away and you can't handle them, then we'll talk about, and you've got, you're turning people away and you can't handle them, but not because you're either your systems are so inefficient or they're based on fear of offending and you're selling time. So in other words, any of you that if you're seeing 100 visits a week and you're pushing people away, it's because you got weak ass philosophy or confrontational tolerance or whatever. If you adjust your friends and family in 1, 2, 3, 4 minutes, whatever it is, and you're seeing 100 visits a week and you're full, there's something broken there that has to get fixed way before you hire an associate. Oh, this is definitely not friendly talk time, is it? This is reality check time. So the point is, don't choose an associate. Build your systems to where they're absolutely stellar and perfect, and you're chasing people away. And you're in a lot better place rejecting people and creating more demand for you than having to fill, you know, associates are like baby birds. They need to be fed all the time or they die. So how not to be an asshole? Sorry, guys, not qualified.
When you say, Mark,
yeah.
Mark, so when you say they died, you mean like their
energy, or they'll kill you. Actually, they could well kill you in the process.
No, I mean,
gathering more and more food for them, Arturo.
You mean they will leave the practice or their energy level will go down?
Okay, look, most associates, if you don't feed them news, what's their practice going to do?
Go down.
And then they're not going to make any money, and you're not going to make any money, and everybody's pissed off and stressed out, right?
Yeah.
So you got to keep feeding them, which means you need to be good enough at the work of feeding them, but don't expect them to be able to feed themselves. And if they are able to feed themselves, then it's fucking brilliant. So, questions, comments, anything?
I had a question about the energy level shift and becoming a different person.
Okay, so Claire, before we go there, okay, sorry, go ahead. Ask the question then.
You once told me that you saw Sue Brown practice and you were skeptical at first.
I was super skeptical until I walked in. But anyway, I go on.
I never got a chance to see her actually practice. I would love to know what you saw. What was that person that had that energy using how I work that was able to bring in those kind of numbers?
She had total certainty. She had total certainty. Physically, she was not a stellar example of health and fitness. She was incredibly pear-shaped. Not your, success hour image. And the practice was full from opening moment until 3 hours later when people left. It was in 12 tables, three rooms, 12 tables, completely full the whole time. And I think 100 people. And I would say the difference was her total certainty and zero expense of energy convincing people. We spend so much time and energy convincing people, and we just look like fucking either salespeople or wimps when we do that. Right? And this is something that hopefully, if I can get Joe through the Zoom challenges, right? Joe's 80 years old. And on Monday, he'll adjust more people than you guys will in a week. And he's 80 fucking years old. Right? And he comes from this culture of total certainty and total kicking ass. And that's just normal to him. You know, it's like, so it's so, okay, so I'm gonna go back to what I was gonna ask you beforehand. Claire, you quadrupled your practice in about 6 months, right?
Yes.
What shifted in you? After 19 years in practice, something like that?
I didn't believe at first that I...
No, hang on a second, but you were 19 years in practice.
17.
Is that correct?
17. Hello?
17. Okay, 17. See? Okay, so 17 years in practice, and you quadrupled your practice in 6 months. What shifted?
I believe in myself more.
Okay. Yeah.
That's it. Really. Yeah. But I still find myself yakking at people who are like, and that's making me crazy.
Well, when you lose the need or addiction to yak, or you can replace the yak with focused, powerful communication, then it goes to the next level as well. That'll expand your capacity. You'll be able to see more people. When you move out of the fucking whale music place with the...
You get out of there.
Exactly. Yeah. She's in a whale birthing center. Or some shit. I mean, some fucking very new age shit stuff. Which is all fine, which is no judgment about it. But the people that own her space don't want her seeing a lot of people.
No, there's zero energy. I literally have to come up like a drag queen to bring some energy to the place.
Well, good. Good training. And it takes that energy from all of us. And so I don't know if I said this before, but I was thinking about the energetic presence in the room and when we're adjusting people, right? Is the public is there for an energetic interaction with us. Chiropractic is an incredibly efficient way to deliver that energetic input. It's efficient, it's reproducible, and there's a story around it that, when well told, people are willing to accept. They're willing to let that in. And so we go into our space, right? Be it your one room, be it three tables, be it seven tables, whatever it is, right? And your energy, you can have your, okay, so first of all, you have to have total presence with your energy, right? And the person who's on your table needs to be totally, you need to be totally with that person on your table. And then when you get better at it, you can then be with that person and also with the next person and the next person and the next person. And so I worked off of four tables for a long, long, long time. And you got to own the four walls, the roof, the ceiling, and your energy. Like it's like a cloud of smoke that expands out of you, that hits the ceiling and goes down the sides. And like it, that your energy, your, that room is your energy. And if you can do that, then you own the room. And then you get to set the tone and the message and the vibe in that room. And that's what really good entertainers do, right? Like, you know, the Freddie Mercury at Wembley for Bob Geldof's thing, whatever the fuck it was, when they're doing the crowd there, and Wembley is just vibing with him. Like he, you know, and that's, and I don't know, it's 50,000 people. I don't know how many thousands of people it is, right? It's incredible. And that's what we got to do. That's what we got to do. Just like a restaurant. The restaurant is the, it doesn't have to be a chef. It can be an owner, but your energy totally fills that space. And every single, like the fucking plate washer, like one person is responsible for the success of that place, which doesn't mean you don't have team members that you train, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But for each of you that I'm looking at on this screen, you're responsible for the energy in your space and the success of your space. And for those of you who are asking me, what if the rest of your team is not on board? We can talk about that privately. But essentially, you either have to change teams, or you have to get the teams on board, or you have to lower your number. You know, there's no way around it. You got a number, and you've got people in the execution of the number. And I've told this story 100 times about Eva, and what was the other one's name? Attila the Hun and Genghis Khan is what Lynn called my two CA, my second and third CAs. We fired the first one who was an introvert. And then I got these two other CAs working for me, and they're just fucking horrible. And they're argumentative and blah, 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 blah. And so I get the big idea. I want to grow. I want to push. I'm pushing. And numbers are flat. And then finally, after, I don't know, and I'm making numbers up again, I'm at 18 months or of this or something. I'm like, fuck it. They're out of here. We fire them. Lynn comes in. She doesn't speak Spanish. She doesn't know the systems. She doesn't know the practice members. And our numbers go from 70 to about 100 a day in 2-3 months, like that, after being totally stuck. And the difference was, so I would go out to the appointment book, and I'm like, what the fuck? What are you doing? What are you doing putting these things in here? And like, well, it's a new person they called in, and I put it in there, you know? And it's like, you know, fucking Mr. Big Mouth, work, you know? Right? You say you want to grow? Well, fucking grow, right? It's like, okay. And then you bust through new levels.
So, Mark, my question would be, how do you create that? What tools do you use to expand the energy to create more certainty? What is the shift that it needs to be?
Vital experience. You hear somebody at Cairo Europe that inspires you, that you connect with, that you say, hey, if that person can do it, I can do it. I mean, so people went and saw Sigafoos, for instance, right? And they went and saw Sigafoos, and they just went, oh my God, funny old man standing on stage. Anecdotal from the 70s. And I saw Sigafoos, and I thought, fuck, if Sigafoos can do it, like, if you ever look really closely at Sigafoos, he had no fucking chin, man. Like, he had no chin. He had that beard on there to hide the fact that he had no fucking chin, right? If the fucking chinless wonder can see 600 a day, then fuck, why can't I? Right? And I got it up. I got it up not to 600 because I got there and I'm like, whoa. And I got distracted. I started a school. I started doing politics, and Sigafoos did not do that shit, right? And as soon as I start doing that, my practice goes, because I wasn't pushing the practice anymore, because I'm doing other shit, right? So how do you get that? You push like crazy. Like, oh, but and what if you're turbulent and that causes you stress? And I fucking get over it. Jesus fucking Christ.
Oh, but I get stressed out by that. See if I can do, hang on a second. See if I can share something here. I don't know if I can find it. No. No, okay. It's a story of no, I'll find it for you guys later. But anyway, it's a story about commitment, right? And it's Pat Miletich, who's an MMA fighter, who tells a story of when he got in MMA. So he quit his job. He moves back into his house. His basement flood. He's living with his mother in a basement, you know, apartment. He says he got a 9mm, put a round in it, and said, if I don't make it within this period of time, I'm going to fucking blow my brains out. And he said every time he fought, he was thinking about that 9mm. It's like, oh, well, that's fucking extreme. And that might be triggering for people and whatever. It's like, okay, worked for him. And I'm not saying do suicidal shit. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying, and so what he says, the whole point behind all that, was that he was saying that he had total commitment to his goal. And he said, I would much rather work with someone with total commitment rather than someone who's got talent. I'll take an untalented person with commitment over a talented person with no commitment. Okay. Questions, anything? You got to push yourselves. You want to grow, you got to push yourself. There's just no way around that part of it. All right? Let me get some notes from recordings.
Mark, when you say pushing, for you, what it is really? What it is? Is it your team? Is it you? Is it visualization? What do you call pushing?
It's that. If you need more new patients, it's going out. So, question. Have the strikes in Paris affected you?
Huh. At the beginning, no, because we adapt.
Okay.
But week by week.
Okay. So how much outreach in the neighborhood have you done?
For the moment, no.
Before?
We are mistaken of not playing with the neighborhood. I know okay. It.
So that's it. So you say, how do you push? How do you push? So Adam brought this up in Kick-Ass, right? About I've got all my systems are in place and I got capacity and I want the news. How am I going to get the news in? And Erin made that absolutely brilliant post about what she does for creating culture, right? Which backs up this, my stuff about creating culture. So that's all great. And then so on the last call, I don't know, Friday, I guess, he's like, and so I told him to go door to door, right? Do the door to door thing. Like go to door and say, hi, my name's Adam. I'm open. So the other guy that did it, I'm opening up a chiropractic office and I'm looking at three locations and three names. Which do you like best? Would it be okay for me to invite you to a grand opening? Right? That. And you know, and the guy that did that went from 0 to 500 visits a week in 6 months of opening straight out of school. No, not true. Not straight out of school. 6 months of opening. He was 6 months in the setup of his office. They graduated, 6 months setup.
During that 6 month setup, he does the door-to-door canvassing. And then he opens, and within 6 months, he's at 500 business a week. Right? Because he got his ass out there. It's like, you know, if you go to the door of a person and you say, hi, Sebastian. You know, you sound like a fucking seal, right? Chiropractic, good. Here, take a card. You know, if you do that, they're just going to go, Mary, who was that at the door? I don't know, some fucking idiot. I don't know what he wanted, but Jesus Christ. Don't change channels while I'm gone out of the room. Where's my beer? That's what they're going to do, right? But if you're good at it with them and you make an effort to, you're excited about chiropractic, you're turned on about it, you've got certainty about your message, and you can't wait to tell people about whatever your message is. If you do that and you get out into your community will go, gosh, we didn't know that La Source Chiropractic was just around the corner from here. I want me some of that. And then you make it easy for them to come into you. Spinal screenings, free checkups, blah, 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 blah. All right. Now, so the other thing I just did is posted in Kick-Ass, right, was real-time first visits, day one and day two. And my time with my day one is 4 minutes. And my time with my day, that's including the adjustment. And my time with the day two is 2 minutes and 30 seconds. So we can do a bunch of news without it being energetically draining for me. Oh, but I'm not set up for that yet. Okay, well, expand your message, get efficient. A group talk is a great way to do that. You talk to people in a group, you get them excited, and you do them one-on-one. How did Jimmy Gregg, who's one of the guys that inspired Joe Lupo, how did Jimmy Gregg do those 70 news in one day? How did those 70 news come there? The 70 news came there because he gave a class to one woman by herself who next Sunday showed up with two buses and 70 people. And they did those 70 news that day, not 3 months down the road. Oh, I don't have any space for this. Yeah. What, Claire?
Can you do the 4 minute? What do you do in 4 minutes? How do you say
it? Sebastian on the call? Sebastian, you on the call or not? Hello. Not the other Sebastian, Ewald, not Fuentes. Yeah, well, no, he's there on fucking silent without his fucking camera on. All you motherfuckers without your cameras on, turn your fucking cameras on. Now, motherfuckers! Sorry. You just got to get abusive every now and then or it just loses its charm. Okay. So Sebastian is not getting on. Okay, so what do I do in the first visit? You're here?
Yeah.
And turn your fucking camera on.
It's hidden.
It's hidden. Okay, who wants to be patient? Anybody?
I am.
Who?
I'll be patient.
Who said that?
I'll be the patient.
Okay, Claire. Okay, so hi, Claire. It's a pleasure to meet you. So understand, they have already been to a class and they've already had the first visit with my CA who's gone through the history, the form that they filled out, done an SEMG posture scan, bilateral waist scales or quadrant waist scales. And if they have an X-ray or MRI, that's been taken out of the room. We've studied that in private. And so we go back into the room, right? So I've read the file. I know what's going on with them, et cetera. So I walk in and I say, hi, Claire. Do you have any questions over anything I went over in the class with you the other day or what you just went over with Isabel? Do you have any questions?
Yes.
What?
What's wrong with me? I'm still not clear on that.
Okay, well, that's what we're going to figure out today. So do you have any other questions? I mean, that's a stupid question. Generally, they say no. You're just being obstreperous right now. Okay.
I have to bring the butts come in sometimes.
Okay, but that's because they have, if they've already been to a class and they've already been to through this exam process, they're hoping that I will take them on.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Like there's not a, but they can say, so they can do, they can say in that, at that time, oh, do you have any questions? Well, my shoulder really hurts. No, I get that, Claire. That's not a question. I'm asking you, do you have any questions over what I went over in the class or what Isabel just went over with you right now?
Okay, no.
Okay, so let me explain what we're going to do today. I am going to touch your back. I'm not going to do anything without hurting you, and I'm not going to do anything without telling you beforehand what it is that I'm doing. If I can help you, I will tell you. If I cannot help you, I will tell you that as well. Do you have any questions?
Will it hurt?
I just told you I'm not going to do anything that's going to hurt. Do you have any other questions? Like, do you fucking listen? I am not going to hurt you, and I'm not thinking about telling you beforehand what it is that I'm doing. Do you have any questions?
No, I'm good.
Okay, great. So have a seat here. Where, so I'm sitting on the table. They're sitting in the chair. I will walk around to the back of the table. I'll say, have a seat where I was sitting. Scoot back. And my CA is there next to me. And women will have a gown on. Men will have their shirts off, right? So the gown opens in the back. I'll open the gown up and I'll say, okay. And then I'll start calling out listings to my CA. So I'll say, Hema, apunta, Hema, write this down, please. Left PI. L4 right, T12 anterior, T6, T5, T4 anterior, T1 PRS, reverse cervical curve, blah, 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 C1 right. Okay. And then I will, after I get through doing that, I will say to I will give my care plan recommendation to my CA. And I will say that as a C1, C2, C3, or C4, generally. If it's a kid and I haven't memorized those plans, I'll say, I'll tell you when I get out there and I look at my cheat sheet. Okay? So, so I'll say C3. And she says, okay, and she walks out. And then I'll turn to you and I'll say, Claire, you have problems in your spine and I can help you. What I am going to do today, and I've already pre-framed this, preempted this in the class, they know they're only getting C1, maybe C2 adjusted today. Okay, so I will say, what I'm going to do today is I'm going to adjust you here. It's going to make some noises like this. It doesn't usually hurt, but it can be a little scary sometimes. Do you have any questions?
No.
Okay. So are we starting? Do you want to start?
Yes.
Great. So lie down here, face up. Now, because in my reception area, I've got that Australian video with whatever it is on mute, and it shows a person face down. In my office, a lot of people will get on the table face down. I'll say, no, face up, face up, the other face up. Okay, great. Because they've just been preconditioned by this video, right? So they're face up. I say, okay. Scoot a little bit this way. And then, and this is a bad habit on my part, but a lot of times I will joke with them at this point. I am actually phasing that out, but I've done this for years and years and years. And I would say, Claire, so I'm saying, okay, first I'm going to adjust you here, then here. Before I start, Claire, and just in case, do you have any last words? Right? And they're like, what the fuck? And it's like, and then they'll start laughing, right? Okay. And so then I'll say, okay, relax your left shoulder, boom, relax your right shoulder, boom. And then again, mistake, I will say, wiggle your toes. And so they wiggle their toes and I'll say, thank God.
Huh.
Okay. And then I'll say, Claire, that's all for today. Don't move. Don't do anything. Do you have any questions? Okay. Say it again.
How long do I stay here?
Okay. So after each adjustment, I didn't say that right because I'm used to doing this in Spanish. So I'll say, Claire, that's all for right now. Don't move. Don't do anything. After each adjustment, you're going to rest for a couple of minutes on the table. Now, obviously, you don't do that if your office is only one table in some $50 million a month room in Brooklyn, New York, right? You know, you don't do that. You're like, as soon as we get through here, you get the fuck out of here so somebody else can get on these tables, right? But in my case, where I've got the real estate and I can do that, I'll say, look, you rest on the table for a couple of minutes. And then after a couple of minutes, you're going to get up, get dressed, go out to the front desk. And at the front desk, they're going to set your appointment. They're going to confirm your appointment for the next visit. Then the next visit, we're going to explain to you what's wrong, what to do to help in the process, what not to do to not screw up the process. And then what I did here, and I'll touch them here today, I am going to do here and here as well. Do you have any questions? No. Okay, great, Claire. I'm so glad. You're going to get, you know, whatever, animos, good spirits, you know, love. Okay, and I'll see you next time. Now, if it's a person who's dizzy, I'll say, Claire, don't move until Hema comes back. Okay, that's it.
Thank you.
My first visit, and I just posted the other day in the group, and it's 4 minutes, right? And then the report of findings part is, so Claire, because you've just gone through the report of findings with my CA, right? And you don't get to me unless you've accepted the recommendation of care and agreed to the time and agreed to pay for it. Like, you have to pay for the initial phase of care. If it's twice a week for 3 months, if it's twice a week for 4.5 months, if it's twice a week for 6 months, you have to pay for that either upfront or in 3 monthly payments, or we will not accept you as a practice member. If you can't commit to that, we don't want you. All right? So by the time you get back to my table, then it's like you've already accepted all of that, right? So now it's, Claire, do you have any questions over what Isabel just went over with you? Go ahead.
No.
Okay. Did you have any reactions to the adjustment I gave you the other day?
Yes, it felt good.
Great. So what I'm going to do today, so if you say it felt terrible, or I felt great when I left here, but it, you know, then the next day I woke up, blah, 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 I'll say, Claire, are you concerned about that? And generally they'll say no, because they've already been over it with my CA, right? So generally they'll say no. I'll say, okay, so what I'm going to do today is what I did here. I'm going
to
do...
Sorry, I meant to have onions done.
Go on. Mute. There we go. So what I did here the other day, I'm going to do with the rest of your spine today as well. And so what I need for you to do is I need for you to relax your body, dead weight, relax your shoulders, and then I adjust. And so they're face up for the exam. They're on the table for the report of findings. I'll adjust them generally anteriors, then one side posture. And so I'll say, look, I promise you, you're not going to fall off the table, even though it may seem that way. Okay, face up, adjust. Claire, that's everything for right now. I want you to, do you have any questions? No. Okay. I want you to rest here until Hema or Patricia or whoever's working the room that day, until they come. Don't move until she comes. And so we give them instructions on how to sit up from the table after the adjustment. Right. And that's day one and day two.
Yeah. Mark, what do you say about adverse reactions generally?
So what kind of adverse reactions?
Numbness. After you adjust me, I have numbness in my fingers.
Okay, well, okay. Question, Monica, are you okay with that?
Not sure.
Okay. Well, I am. And so that's going to color the communication completely.
Got it.
So that's it.
What do you say?
So you have numbness in your fingers. is this something you've never had before? It's a question. Now, I wouldn't ask them that question. This is from their history, from before. Like, is this a brand new thing that's never happened before? Yes. Or is this just part of their condition?
Brand new.
Okay. Well, so first of all, are you concerned about it, Monica? Not as a practitioner. This is Monica, the patient, who's got the numbness in her hand.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've never had it before. It's freaking me out.
So as we start moving the bones in your spine, it can put pressure on the nerves in different ways. So, I mean, I don't know what you want me to tell you. It's for me, it's not a big deal. And for the people on my table, it's not a big deal either.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I would contend that there's probably a lack of information getting to them before that point. Mm-hmm. And they don't have any. In other words, by the time people are in their port of fines with me, they're like, I really want this. And they're not looking for, you know, like, and if it's like, oh, well, you know, I was fine. But then, you know, I walked out of here with blinding headaches and puked. It's like, okay, well, we will adjust your cervicals much, much, much more gently.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Well, I don't know if I should continue care. Well, that's a decision you need to make. Because underlying all of my communication with that person is going to be, you need me, I don't need you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I love you. I respect you. I want you to get well. I want transformation to happen in your life. But yeah, so you got numbness in your hand, you know? I told you guys the Panama story, right? Of that national student who came? No, yes, no, maybe? No, no. Some of the people have been coming to Chicago for years and heard it 50 million times, right? So we're in Panama, and the chinless wonder is leading that one. and so no tables. Right. And this student comes from National, and he's got his table with him, and he's freaking out about how am I going to adjust people if I can't adjust people on this table. And so it's seated cervical chairs only. And he adjusts this guy, and the guy keels over out of his chair and like passes out on the floor and keels over. Okay. So what do we do now? I don't know. I'm asking you guys, what do we do?
Run around panicking.
Okay, who said that? Zoom user.
I'm joking. Only.
Okay.
I personally would check on him and see if he's okay.
Okay, so let me explain what happened in the situation. Yeah. The guy who's on the floor, his wife steps over his body and hands the chiropractor her child. That's what happened there. Real story. No bullshit. Why? Now, why did that happen? The woman was not trying to kill her child as well. That wasn't the context of it. Okay? The deal was that the message on this mission was absolutely huge. And it was, and then the guy woke up and he went, oh, fuck. Oh, my God. Wow. That was really good. You know, like that. Versus, oh, my God, you almost died. Because I'm a fuck up chiropractor and I don't know what I'm doing. And I adjusted your cervicals and you almost died. Quick, get him to the fucking emergency room. How many of you has adjusted someone who's gone into an epileptic seizure? Anybody or not? No? No, 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 nobody? Okay. Well, how about epileptic seizure in an open room with maybe 40 people in the office What do you do? We sat him in the chair, did this deal, had CA stay with him, went and adjusted the next people, and the guy came out of it, and he was okay. So I question, Chloe, wasn't going to make you speak, but your dog was having a seizure, right? Okay, and what did I do?
Not sure, something to her atlas, I think.
And what happened?
And she started calming down. And now I do that.
And she does? Yep. And she calms down? All right. And I don't know a fucking thing about adjusting dogs. And I don't even like that fucking dog. Like, I actually really actively dislike that dog.
She loves you, though.
Yeah, okay. That's so sweet. You know, it's like we got this guilt complex where we're looking at, oh my God, I suck. I'm incompetent. This is bad. I'm going to get sued. They're going to take my license. They're going to close my office down. I'm going to end up eating out of the dumpster. You know, and I used to use the McDonald's dumpster. I think McDonald's locks their dumpster, so you're not going to eat out of the McDonald's dumpster. Okay? You know, we got to get over it. We got to get over our fear. What holds chiropractors back? And then I'm going to stop on this one, right? What holds chiropractors back? What holds chiropractors back is, you want the polite version or the full-on version? Who wants the polite? We'll go with polite first, right? Polite first would be apathy, lack of knowledge or lack of systems, and a need for social validation, okay, is what holds chiropractors back. And if you translate it into, like, it's refined, brutal truth. It's laziness, incompetence, and fear. Right? That's what holds us back. It can be apathy. It can be depression. It can be burnout. It can be whatever flavor it is. Right? The fear is, what are they going to think about me? What are my colleagues going to think about me? They're going to shut me down, blah, 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 all this stuff. And then with the procedures part, it's like, do you fucking know how to be a chiropractor? Because you weren't taught how to be a chiropractor in school, because that's not their job. Their job is to give you a piece of paper that says you're safe to go out into the public. And you don't know how to run an office. You don't know how to adjust people. You don't know how to get results. You don't know how to communicate. You don't know anything. And so if you can at least recognize that you don't know anything, then you can get connected to people who can teach you how to do your shit. Then you can be around Sigafoos and Dick Santo in Panama, where somebody's getting adjusted and they're falling out of the chair and somebody's stepping over them, handing them the baby, and the person wakes up and they go, oh gosh, that was really good. Versus, oh my God, oh my God, you okay, you okay, you okay, you okay, like that. Or where this woman hands me the paralyzed baby, and I go, what the fuck? And then I adjust the baby, and the baby's not paralyzed anymore. And then when I see Bowie's dog going into an epileptic seizure, I just go, oh, okay. And the dog goes, ooh. And they're fucking barking. They just started. Motherfuckers, I hate those fucking dogs. Which of those four dogs is the most worthless? She's not saying anything. Okay.
You.
That's really funny. So we got one dog. So this is the fucking epileptic dog too, right? So the epileptic dog comes to our house in April, right? And we got to take this epileptic dog in because the owner of the dog is going to Ibiza to work in a restaurant or something, blah, 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 blah. But they're going to get the dog at the end of the, yeah, that one, at the end of the season, right? And hang on a second. Yeah, the worthless fucking dog. So anyway, so then it's like, it's dragging on and dragging on and dragging on. It's like, when's this dog leaving? Because it's a horrible barker, right? Like, when's this dog leaving? Like, when's he? When's... And so what happened to the dog? Why is the dog still with us?
Because the owner's in jail.
The owner's in prison for selling drugs. We got a fucking drug-dealing dog living in our house. Anyway, okay, sorry. And I apologize, Chloe. I'm sorry. Okay, any last question?
Yeah. Mark, can I say something? It's in relation to what Monica was asking. I heard Marcelo a long time ago, one time that somebody says, hey, you adjusted me and I'm hurting now. And he said, good, good. That means your nervous system is waking up. That's great. We'll keep adjusting you. And that was really interesting to hear at that time. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, good. Like, we have to be, so, certainty, size of message, and enthusiasm. Oh, I got numbness in my hand. Oh, my God. Oh, my certainty just went, boom. All right. Anything else?
Mark.
Leon.
Yeah, I have a suggestion or a thought about your first visit. Incongruency with day one, day two of no pesos, no tacos mindset of Brad Glowacki.
Okay, I mean, but that's Brad's system.
I know very good. Your historical justification of why adjusting the upper cervical in day one.
Yeah.
But could you imagine if you start now your practice, if your procedures will change to not adjusting in day one, or would you maintain the first adjustment as a part, values part of your success? I mean, is a golden piece or not? Is a relevant.
Pregúntamelo en castellano y lo traduzco. Vale.
Okay, gracias. Si es algo relevante, si es algo de valor, si es algo clave, is a key. Para la visita 1, para día 1.
Ajustarles en la primera visita, si eso es clave para mí.
Sí.
Okay, so he's asking, is the first visit adjustment a key part of, I don't know, success? No, it's not. It is for me. I can't do it, and I've told you guys a story why I adjust on the first visit. But I also frame it as this is part of the exam so that I can give you proper recommendations of care, because you go to adjust certain people and instead of it being clean, you bounce off or it's horrible or whatever. And then if you've already given your recommendation of care, then you got to go back and change your recommendation of care because the adjustment didn't turn up, you know, the way you thought it was going to, et cetera, right? So I actually don't think it matters. I don't think it matters. I own my procedures and my systems and the way we do things. They're designed for my number. And we're not losing people. So in other words, the whole argument behind not adjusting people on the first visit is if you're losing them, like they're not seeing value in the adjustment. Like it's quote unquote devaluing the adjustment. Okay. For us, it's not. We've got pretty close to 100% conversion rate. Like pretty much everybody's coming, coming to the report of findings is, or coming to the day one is signing up. You know, so it's not hurting us. All right. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but yeah, it's not hurting us. And so for those of you who haven't heard it, the reason I adjust is I had a little girl who came in who, and I did not adjust on day one because I was taught by practice managers to not adjust on day one. And so I didn't adjust this girl on day one. And then her mother comes back about 3 weeks later and the 13-year-old kid had died of a heart attack. And the mother's asking me, if she had gotten adjusted, would she not have died? And I didn't know what to say. And so based on that, I started adjusting everybody on day one, right? So 1 second. And I have her report of findings somewhere here that I keep, that when I go through my paperwork, I find that report of findings sometimes. Her name was Mireya. And I think because of fucking practice management, did this little girl die? I don't know. But I'm not going to do that again. So, more questions. All right, guys. We'll have a, well, how did Grandio go? Look good. Pictures look good.
Fabulous, fantastic. Oh, I'm so a glad. Really good one.
I'm so glad.
You will have a great time if you take a plane to see us.
Yeah, but I've got, my lungs are fucked up. I don't want to get on an airplane and I don't want to be in a hotel room. And I really appreciate the invitation and maybe next time, but right now I got work I need to be doing and I appreciate it, but I need to focus on what I'm doing. What's that? So what else? Okay, guys, have a wonderful rest of your Sunday. And
thank you.
Some of you next week. Bye.
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 Okay. See you guys later. Ciao, ciao.